This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host, Tim Henney. Well, we've been talking a lot about our wonderful and spectacular Park City trails recently, and why not? They provide an escape from routine, take us into, well, wilderness, we'll say.
I've been in wilderness up there.
Yeah. Just steps from the hustle and bustle of Old Town, or town in general, and offer spectacular beauty in a variety of forms. Now, add a trained psychiatric nurse practitioner, and you have a formula for peeling back layers, obstacles, stigma, and creating a space of trust and safety necessary to explore topics like anxiety, self-esteem, and relationships. That's the concept behind Trail Talk. It's a new model for mental care. We're joined by Allison Page, the founder of Trail Talk. Allison, welcome to The Mountain Life. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You are the founder of Trail Talk. Is that correct? We weren't sure because we knew that there is also a Trail Talk somewhere in the valley. Is that right?
Oh, that's mine too. Oh. Well, I am the lead trailblazer. And yes, I created Trail Talk. I came up with the idea in 2010. I was actually, my kids went off to college and I went back to grad school because I just am a lifelong learner. And I decided my second or my final nursing career was going to be as a psychotherapist. And so I was in the woods one day, stressed out and thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe this school is so hard. And then I had this light bulb moment where I said, oh my, I'm going to do this with my clients. And I ran home and I looked up Trail Talk and then I trademarked it and haven't looked back.
That's so great. You know, being on the trails, especially, well, here in Park City on the vast variety and diversity of trails that we have, that's when I have my greatest epiphanies about life. And I often think in the times that I feel most anxious and stressed, I know now, just get myself out on the trail and everything changes shape mm-hmm. and form. And you must... How do you feel that your therapeutic practice is, you know, enhanced or made so much easier, facilitated just by being out in nature?
Well, when you're walking and talking, there's a bilateral movement, left brain, right brain. And as you move and as you're in nature, there's a decrease in the emotional valence of a particular issue. So as the emotional intensity of the issue decreases, you're able to put your thinking cap on and you can think and feel at the same time. So many of us are emoters and we're just really upset about something. Well, move, walk, be in nature, and all of a sudden the intensity drops. And then as the intensity, you gain clarity. So you move your body and you clear your mind.
And Allison, there's been wilderness therapy around for a long time. I don't know how long. I think it's been a long time. I have a child
yes.
who went through wilderness
Years,
therapy.
Yes.
I sort of feel like I grew up in wilderness therapy when I was a kid because right. all I did was play in the wilderness.
Right.
You know,
right.
we happen to live in a place with a lot of woods in the backyard
Absolutely.
And bridal trails
mm-hmm.
and all that. But your version seems like almost wilderness therapy light, and I'm assuming that there are people who don't need to go for 14 weeks into the wilderness and have their shoes taken away at night so that they don't run out in, you know, the snow, which is what kids tend, you know,
yeah.
that age group tends
right.
to do. And so I'm wondering, you know, are you dealing with a different demographic, a different age group, or just a different need where people just want to kind of, as you say, move, clear their minds, and that peels away and creates a space that is different than their normal space where they can then share with you, or you can go a little deeper with them somehow. It opens up a portal to exploring places that wouldn't otherwise be available.
Right. So my first take was, why should we not enjoy wilderness therapy in mainstream mental health care? So as I've been in Park City for close to 30 years, and I realized that we're sending our kids away to wilderness therapy programs What about the parents? What about their siblings? Why aren't we using nature as a therapeutic milieu within mainstream private practice? And so my whole gig and approach to Trail Talk is opening the doors of the traditional therapy office and shedding light on the shame and stigma of emotional care for active functional folks. So we're all, you know, we are all functional. Does it mean our quality of life is great? Not necessarily. And so what I'm trying to do is combine nursing theory with wilderness therapy. And we're actually collecting data. I've aligned myself with the wilderness therapy community. There's a large consortium called the Outdoor Behavioral Health Group. And so I'm collecting the same kind of data to show that we can use nature as our therapeutic backdrop, if you can say, in a way that we're offering emotional tune-ups to folks that don't feel like they're sick enough to sit in an office. So all of us have issues, and if we don't, we're either lying or we grew up in very boring families. You know, so sometimes mm-hmm. we just want to talk with a professionally trained therapist to say, you know, I got this anxiety. I'm not sure where it's coming from. And so our approach is let's make some changes. Let's work for I offer six packs to work on our emotional core. And let's walk and talk about it. And we're very action oriented. We guide, and I mean, we're professionally trained therapists from all different types of therapy programs. We're just combining wilderness therapy experiential techniques in nature.
And what happens when you take somebody out into the wilderness on a trail? What do you see before your eyes? Is there a visible change? Is there something that you can, you know, you can't maybe document with data, but you see transform.
Right.
I don't
but
know.
If you've never done therapy, many of us believe it's Freudian. And so what allows us when we're walking and talking side by side. Now, you have to understand that when you're walking with a professionally trained therapist, it's side by side. It doesn't replace exercise. There's nobody going to be walking behind me up a trail. There's no sense of competitiveness. And so it's really all about side by side, and it allows for intermittent eye contact. So that really is great for teens. And some men say, this is so weird. I'm talking to a stranger and people have intrusive thinking. So it really allows you to get to know someone in an environment. And some people say, well, you need a container. It's like, sometimes you do, but other times it's really just getting comfortable with talking to a therapist, and walking feels so much more natural. And we do it with our friends, our family members, but they oftentimes will tell us what we want to hear versus being with someone that's an objective outsider, helping you develop some tools for your self-regulating toolbox.
You know, I'm just realizing, Lynn, that Nan Shalit Noker took me for a walk a couple years ago and talked about business-related or community-related issues. And then Diane Foster, when I have a meeting with her, she likes to take me for a walk too. Allison, are they delving into therapy with me?
No, but what they're doing is they're allowing for an opportunity to have a little bit of an endorphin at the sun. You know, it's going to change your emotional space. And so they want to make sure that you can really hear. And so when the emotion of the issue kind of drops a little bit, you're able to put your thinking cap on and you can think and feel at the same time. That's the goal, right?
It's funny that Tim brings that up, because I think often about our meetings in general, whether it's therapy or just whatever kind of meetings, are very inefficient oftentimes. And the walking meeting is, I remember reading about it a few years ago, and you know, and it seems to be something that is very effective. And I wanted to go back to that intermittent eye contact. Mm-hmm. You know, you're sitting in a therapist's office and they're asking you these really uncomfortable questions. And what else are they going to look at but right at you, staring you down? And
right.
I've always thought that's part of why you open up on a trail, is because you're not being stared down. You're looking at the trail, and it creates a level of comfort.
Right. And think about driving with your kids, and when they're debriefing, I mean, they'll just talk and talk and talk, and it's almost like it's free association. They're not looking at mom's eyes, and they're not worrying about judgment. You know, we're all very sensitive to being judged, and sometimes that intermittent eye contact gives us a chance to just not feel or read into someone's eye contact. So no, that intermittent eye contact is really helpful, and it does take away the intensity of sitting. It just feels more natural.
Yeah. You talk about a special niche demographic, and that is that of the disenfranchised.
Oh, I love that.
How are we disenfranchised? What are you seeing? And because that term really jumped out at me.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does, because we hear about that, a group of disenfranchised. So I've been in the nonprofit world all my nursing career. This is my very first for-profit venture. And so the disenfranchised, we think, is the weak, the poor, the homeless. Well, actually, when you think about active, functional, high-performing people, they don't seek emotional care because of the shame and stigma associated with it. Like, I can be so successful in my professional arena. Why are my relationships falling apart? Why am I getting divorced? What's happening with my children? And so disenfranchised, meaning they don't feel like they're sick enough to deserve to be seen. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not like have schizophrenia. And so it's like, oh, I don't know if I, you know, it's really not. I should probably do it myself, pull myself up by my bootstraps. So I call this is a very disenfranchised group, because they don't access mental health care services because it doesn't feel like, oh, I just don't know. It takes people sometimes 10 years before they'll make that phone call to say, you know, I got some anxiety or depression. And I really need to talk about it.
Oh, when we could nip it in the bud, really, if we just went and got help. And maybe help's not even the right word. Maybe it needs to be called something else.
It's really
maybe
learning.
Even therapy is not the right word.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Therapy has a lot of stigma about it. It's really all about filling your toolbox with self-regulating skills, learning how to tolerate emotion. So a lot of people are affect intolerant. They just can't tolerate strong emotions. They don't dare start crying because they may not stop. They were never validated that fear is real, and they're scared or they're sad. And so we bottle up those emotions, and it shows up as anxiety. It's like a teapot. I have this metaphor that I use, and it's a roaring teapot. And that little whistle is that's the anxiety. But underneath it are roaring emotions that are intolerable. And so we have to learn how to, like, you know, I have all these emotions. They're to inform us. And so learning how to tolerate emotions, at the same time learning how to self-regulate and say, okay, I got to feel this. I got to name it. I have to decide how to respond to it. But I got a meeting to go do. I need to learn how to self-regulate. So we mood state change all the time. And so it's really learning how to balance that. And that's when you're walking with a professionally trained therapist, is really understanding where those emotions came from, how to recognize and then renounce and rebuild new ways of doing relationship. So it's a process.
So Austin, tell me about the business model and how it's grown and what you've seen as far as the evolution and kind of where you think it's going. Because you talked about collaborative efforts, and I could see how this could plug in and be an add-on to a lot of existing services already and kind of bridge some gaps between those providers.
Well, what I'm trying to do is, I've been a nurse since 1980, and I seem to always I get passionate about things. I started out, I'm going to tackle childhood obesity, and worked in that field for quite a while. Did my first master's thesis on that, developed a program. Then I went into the homeless arena. And now I'm working on destigmatizing emotional care for active functional people. So Trail Talk, I've created it into being a turnkey operation. I thought, if I can do this, anybody can do this. And I want other people to enjoy it. So we've birthed the Trailhead, and it's Trail Talk Provo. I am growing Trail Talk Park City. I had a Trail Talk Salt Lake City. I had to take it down because of a health problem I had a couple years ago, but we're expanding. And so my goal is that they're going to be, Trail Talk's going to be a form of therapy for people like us. And it's like very, it's international.
And I'm when hoping. Did you begin it?
2010.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
yep.
The same year you
trademarked
got your...
the heck out of it, and yep. Have created this niche, looking at this niche or niche demographic, us, mm-hmm. folks like us. That are functional, but we're not necessarily able to keep our relationships together.
And so you shut down Salt Lake, you have a Provo, you have a Park City, and you see growth potential and things are gaining traction. Mm-hmm. And how do you see kind of bolting on with some of the other partners around, say, Summit County? Because we have a pretty robust mental wellness alliance going
here. Oh, absolutely. And one thing Trail Talk's really about offering walk and talk, signature walk and talks, I call, with professionally trained therapists. So there are, you know, there are life coaches, there are, you know, walk and wines, and there's many things that are happening. There's a point where someone say, you know, I gotta work on this issue. I've had this this issue. I really want to talk to a professionally trained therapist. So we have a really little different approach. So I think we can be collaborative. We all offer different things. Walking and talking isn't new. It's been around forever. I'm working on creating an opportunity for people like us to seek emotional care in a safe, in a safe way that feels less clinical, and we just rename it emotional tune-ups. You know, we all fall in and out of emotional health. When our stressors overwhelm our coping strategies, everybody needs assistance or support in how do I work through this?
I wanted to go back, Allison, to, I want to talk a little bit about adolescents and teenagers and even, you know, the next step up, which I was going to call millennials, but that doesn't sound right. You know, those in their early to mid-20s, let's say. I was during the May Mental Health Awareness Month, I attended a panel, and it was all kids from high school that were high school ages. And one of the things that they talked about was how other kids should be really open to therapy, like that it shouldn't be stigmatized at all, and people shouldn't shy away from it. And yet, again, I imagine that face-to-face sitting in a therapist's office for an adolescent, for a teenager, is somewhat daunting. Mm-hmm. And so it would seem to me that something like Trail Talk is a perfect forum for that age. Can you take us through, you know, what you're seeing, what you're experiencing with that age in terms of wanting to open up?
Oh, I think walking and talking with adolescents is just, it's brilliant. It works really well. Many adolescents are forced to go to therapy, so it's not going to be easy for the therapist or the teen, because it's all about, I'm going to punish you and my parent because I don't want to be here. It's called readiness to change, and they're in their contemplative state or pre-contemplative. So it's very difficult. Many of our clients come in and they say, I want to make some change. They're in the action stage of change. Teens can move to that, and I think that being outside makes it much more comfortable for them because of that intermittent eye contact, for one. And we're playing. We forget that we need to play, and we need to listen. And so a lot of these children and teens and young adults have been modeled. We model to our kids, right? And so we learn how to do anger. We learn how to do relationships. And we have a worldview. And so if we have parents that don't believe in mental health care, they don't believe in medication, they really look down, or they fear themselves, the stigma of seeking care, like you're asking for help, then the teen's going to feel that too, and feel some shame around it. And nobody wants to be different. Teens want to be like their teens. They don't want to be standouts. They don't want to be different. And so I think that we're seeing a new generation that are accepting. They're so much more tolerant. Gender identity issues are much more tolerating that we've got issues. So I think that there's definitely improvement in this next generation of kids. Mm. And when I see a young adult seeking, a male young adult seeking on his own mental health care, it's like, oh my gosh, you have no idea the pain and sorrow you're saving yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're looking at yourself. And that therapy is all about turning the mirror towards yourself. And we all have a story. We all have someone else to blame. But how am I showing up in relationship? And how am I keeping this pattern going? So that's the hard part of therapy, is turning the mirror towards yourself.
Mm. Our kids have so many stressors. And I have two young male, early 20-year-olds, my sons. And I would love for them to just want to call you up someday and go for a trail walk, mm-hmm. a trail hike. How often, you know, given that age group, you know, what's the percentage of time they're actually reaching out to you on their own or telling their parents, hey, you know, I'd like to go have some therapy. I want to just go talk to someone that's not my parent. And I'm hoping that that percentage is growing. But what do you see it as?
I don't. That's a tough question because mm-hmm. it really is so case by case. You've got some kids that are very proactive and say, "I want to do this," and others they need to feel that it's a safe place and that again they don't want to be different. You want to be accepted by your peers so I don't know. I mean, I see young adult males that are in their early 20s, college age. Young marrieds that are definitely saying, I want to go talk to someone. And I want to do it in an environment like being outdoors because I don't feel like I'm sick. I just want to talk to, I've got an issue that I really want to see if I can learn some skills to work in a more effective way with my partner, you know, and it can be just a simple thing, or it could be, you know, I got to unpack a lot of stuff. I had a lot of childhood trauma, and many high performing people, remember the whole ACE study, you know, working, you know, you've been with Connect Summit to hear that there's an adverse childhood event study that's been going on for years. Many high functional people have very traumatic childhoods, and they've developed a sense of resiliency that has helped them grow in their professional lives. They're still wounded and have some wounds that they want to address, and that trauma-informed care happens on the trail as well. We have therapists that are EMDR trained and really understand how to unpack these issues.
What's EMDR?
It's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's a style of therapy that is used in at the VA for PTSD. And there's, you know, big time trauma, and then there's little t trauma and public humiliation, bullying. Things that happen in our childhood can be very traumatic. It doesn't necessarily mean physical or sexual abuse. It can be bullying, childhood humility, those kind of things. It's just a style of therapy that is very helpful when someone has a history of trauma.
Allison, my impression is therapy is kind of a relatively new endeavor and science. I mean, Freudian, you know, concepts, we're still talking about what's right, what's not right, and delving into that. And is that correct? Is my assessment correct? I mean, if you went back to the 1600s, 1700s, nobody was doing therapy, right? The concept didn't even exist. I don't know what you did.
You worked hard. Yeah. You were on the farm. You were
right.
Surviving. We were on the lowest end of, lowest level of Maslow's hierarchy.
Yeah. So are we exploring mental wellness and emotional wellness and substance abuse and all the related things that come along with that because we have kind of gotten to a point in human evolution where that's possible, where before it was about subsistence and how we were going to exist moment to moment, day to day. And mm-hmm. now we're like, hey, we've got all this free time and all these other issues and stressors, and they have consequences. So let's get into the psyche.
Yeah, it's been around for a long time, and there's many, we call them therapeutic or your theoretical framework. So I talk about family of origin. I've talked about EMDR. There's something called CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. So psychodynamic therapy. There's several types of therapeutic modalities, but many of us over time have an eclectic approach where we know we work. There's something called ACT therapy, you know, acceptance commitment therapy, you know. So every therapist has a different style of therapy, object relations. And so what I'm doing with Trail Talk is I'm actually changing up the approach, and it's really opening that traditional therapy office door. Because most of our mental health care has been behind closed doors, and so when you, and that looks shameful, like there's what's wrong, you know, you can't talk about this, and I think that hiding behind a door or just being behind closed doors really, when you shed light on the shame and stigma of an emotional issue, it can't grow. So that's why I think that being outside is really like we're only as sick as our darkest secrets. And so, you know, it doesn't mean you have to share everything with everybody. sometimes if you just talk to someone about it, it's like, oh my gosh, I am normal. I'm going to be okay. Yes, this was a traumatic experience. Now I'm going to learn some new ways of dealing with it. I'm going to recognize it. I'm going to renounce certain patterns, and then I'm going to rebuild new ways of doing things.
Yeah, I just, you know, to some of the comments that you made about how open the kids are these days, and there seems to be kind of a new acceptance and mm-hmm. a broader, deeper understanding of the human condition. And mm-hmm. maybe that's what it is, because, you know, those traumatic events have been happening to people since there were people.
Absolutely.
And they've been carrying that original wound through generations right. and generations. And yet here we are today having this very open, destigmatized conversation mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. our emotional mm-hmm. and mental wellness, mm-hmm. which seems different than at any other time in the past.
Well, it's because we're starting to realize that everything from the neck up is not self-will. We have a mind, but that mind's an organ. So we have a brain and a mind, and the mind's mysterious, and it's so awesome, and I hope we never figure that out, because that's the beauty of not knowing our death date, you know? It's like, that's the hope and our soul. At the same time, our brain's an organ, and mm-hmm. and that's where we're starting to learn that, oh my gosh, our brain needs more oxygen and sugar and care as much as our heart does. And so now that we're understanding the brain, we've got to realize that, you know, we have problems, and people don't hesitate to take medications. Or, oh, it could be Alzheimer's, it could right. be a stroke, epilepsy. But depression, anxiety, oh, that's self-will. Well, we're realizing that maybe there's something called disease of volition, and there's a lot of people in the neuropsych world that are looking at brain physiology. So I think within our children's lifetime, we're going to be able to take an X-ray of the brain, and instead of giving an antibiotic, we may be able to target what's happening with our neurochemicals. Mm. You know, so yeah. there's just huge things coming to the forefront. And I think just understanding that our brain's an organ, we got to treat it like that and not be so afraid to say, you know, I don't have enough serotonin in my brain and I'm depressed.
Yeah. Allison, I want to ask you before we let you go. We did an interview, I think it was a couple of years ago, and I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name and even the title of the book, but it was about that connection of nature and mental health. And I know that you're a big fan of this. Is it coming to you what the name of the book is?
I remember it too. Richard somebody?
Yeah, I want to say Richard.
Oh, yeah. He's a journalist, and he wrote about that our children are deprived of nature.
Yes.
I mean, think about
that's
all.
That's what it is.
I mean, think about the kids. We went outside until
right.
it was dark. And then
our
mom
aren't.
Might whistle or say, come in the house. And so we were outside playing. And so it's really nature deprivation.
Right.
And our kids are behind the computers. And vitamin D, they're not even getting out in the sun. So it begins with L.
Richard Louvre.
Yeah. And
we'll get it by the time
he's awesome, because he's identified that, again, this disenfranchised group of kids that mm-hmm. we've lost perspective on how important it is to be outside and to unplug and to just be and to play.
Right.
And that's parents have to play with their kids, their teens even.
It was about a week ago we interviewed someone who wrote a book about exceptional children called Differently Wired, mm-hmm. talking about, you know, kids with various exceptions, ADHD, mm-hmm. Asperger's, even giftedness. And it is just occurring to me as we're sitting here talking about, you know, having a child who has ADHD, but you're out on the trail walking, and so they're not plagued with that fidgety, and they're able to just express. It mm-hmm. must just be so freeing for someone like that.
Yeah, it's and we have different learning styles. I mean, I've learned so much about my own learning style, and I'm really normal. And I thought there was something wrong with me. I see in pictures. I learn differently. Mm-hmm. I'm a visual learner, and so kids are like that too. There's different learning techniques. So. Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
You two were both correct. Richard Louvre.
Okay.
L-O-U-V.
Yeah.
His last child in the woods.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's a great book. I wanted to be sure and mention that. Allison Page, thank you so much for joining us. Trail Talk, and how do we find you?
On a trail. Yeah. That's how we found each other.
We saw each other yesterday
the
morning.
The walk and talk therapist has to do her own walking and talking by herself, and she talks to herself in her head. And so I oftentimes will be out on the trails early in the morning before my day starts alone, so I can get my own nature fix, because nature heals. And so you can call us at, look us up, trailtalk.com, and on there you can go to find a location. You can look at all the therapists that we have and see who you might connect with, and call us and come for an emotional tune-up.
Excellent. Allison, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Happy trails to you.
Happy trails to you as well.